You're listening to the Fantasy Football Astronauts.
We are back, the Fantasy Football Astronauts. It is week 6 of the 2021 season. I'm Jetpack Galileo, and we're here with Ryan Keeney. How are you doing today, Ryan?
Doing well. Getting ready for the first bye week of the NFL season. So I guess maybe some players in your waivers that you wouldn't be interested in normally, and you're being forced to go dive into the trash bin a little bit. It's that time of year. So not too bad this week. Only really the big one for me is you got the 49ers out, which is always kind of interesting backfield. And of course, just as Lance was starting to get playing, somehow putting up over 14 fantasy points with zero touchdowns is possible if you're Trey Lance. So I think good things for the future if he's able to even just be semi-competent. I guess that's just goes to show you what the amazing thing for what a rushing floor can do for a quarterback with the way that we score fantasy football. So that was pretty exciting. To see him at least put up that floor. Good things to come for him, maybe. At least we hope. But we're going to have to wait another week to actually see if they can actually maybe improve his real on-the-field performance. So how about you? Any big takeaways through week 6 here?
Yeah, so what
far?
I wanted to take a look at were some of the breakout performances we saw. A couple guys Monday night that are worth talking about. So the format of today, we'll talk about some breakout guys, and then we'll talk about guys that we want to be watching, whether that's due to somebody else possibly getting injured or just that they're returning from injury. Guys that I think are going to be on the rise are going to be worth paying attention to down the road. So we had our Monday night game. That was Ravens-Colts. That was a fun game to watch. Lamar Jackson, 442 passing yards and 4 touchdowns. No rushing touchdowns. It was a very heavy passing game for Lamar, and so that was great to see. And along with that, we saw 2 double touchdown performances from Mark Andrews and Marquise Brown. And both of those guys, I'm really happy to be showing out at this time of year. So Marquise is the guy that I want to talk about, or Hollywood Brown. He is wide receiver 6 on the season right now and already averaging over 20 fantasy points per game. Really just a fantastic start of the year for Marquise. And he's a really fun guy to watch for me. Do you have any thoughts about Marquise just on the season that he's having so far?
Yeah, I think honestly, my biggest takeaway is he's been much more stable than what we predicted. He's someone, you know, his floor at this point is 8 fantasy points per game in week 3. He's been above 19 fantasy points in every other game so far. It's pretty unbelievable. And it's really all in the back of this team changing the way that they're playing. They're passing a lot more often than they have been in the past. Lamar Jackson's on pace to set, you know, break his most of pass attempts in a season. They're much more back towards kind of the league median, even above it a little bit, which is, you know, something we've said is pretty unpredictable every year, and just seems to be that maybe that's what happens when you lose, you know, your 2 best running backs in your team, Gus Edwards and J.K. Dobbins. So they're being forced to pass the ball a little bit more, with Lamar being kind of the main running threat in their offense. In Marquise Brown, while he may not be kind of what you typically think is a number one target hog offense, target, you know, player that's going to be just soaking up the targets, he's good. And if you're giving him a little bit of time to develop on plays, he can definitely break and get deep on plays. So that's for me, it's really exciting. We always kind of knew he was going to be more of a boom bust player, but boom bust players on app, once their volume starts to increase, and really if we think about the talent that is in that wide receiver core and receiving core, it's Mark Andrews, it's Marquise Brown, and then are you really gonna rely on anybody else in that offense? No. And so with Bateman coming back, I think there's some interest there, and definitely a lot of different other analysts are hyping Bateman We think Bateman is a really good talent coming into the NFL. He typically would profile more as someone who would be kind of the target leader in an offense. But Marquise Brown is not going to go away. And the role that he provides and the game-breaking talent that he provides is electric. And he should be in your lineups pretty much each and every week. And I think he's proving that through the season so far. So I think going back through last year, halfway through last year, it's pretty unbelievable if you take a look at the pace that he's on. So he's really just going to continue that, and getting the extra volume going his way is pretty awesome. So
yeah, we talked about being able to break open the FTN data package, and we have that now. So all of our stats are from FTNFantasy.com or FTNData.com. Some of the more premium stuff from them has been really great to be able to crack open. But yeah, when we're looking at Marquise Brown's air yards share, that's up to 33%. So he's looking really, really strong there. He's over 500 air yards on the season. So yeah, just really solid all around, just in terms of how much of the offense he's commanding. And it makes sense because right now, currently, Sammy Watkins is definitely an afterthought. It is the Hollywood and Andrews show. And it's really good to see. I mean, he dropped 3 touchdowns against the Detroit Lions a couple weeks ago. But he's already up to 5 touchdowns on the season. So this is a guy who is going to score big. He's the home run hitter for this team. And so, you know, very often with Lamar and his playing style, you're going to end up, you know, scrambling around and somebody's going to find their way open. And Marquise is excellent at that. And so the other thing that I really appreciate about Hollywood, you can tell route running wise, he's pretty solid. But whenever he's catching the ball, he's always on the move as soon as he catches it. So he's able to make defenders miss right away. And so he does have some sneaky yak ability that we haven't really been able to see. And that shows up a lot more once your volume starts to hit. So Marquise Brown, you know, now that the volume is coming in, I'm expecting him to lock himself in really as a top 20 wide receiver for the season. Definitely believing or buying what's going on right now. And a big fan overall of his game and where Lamar is headed. I do think that when Rashad Bateman enters this field, and when he's back in the game, some of the, like, Rashad is going to be a guy that I want to be invested in as well. So I think he'll be a stud. Might take a little bit of while for him to get going, but just as far as being able to practice and all that, he's running, and I'm sure he's been exposed to you know, plenty of hits in terms of you know, how he's ready to get back on the field. It's, you know, with the core muscle injury or with the sports hernia, you can take some contact, or you can get a little bit more competitive than it would be if it was a knee or a shoulder or something like that. So I'm sure he'll be a little bit more game ready than if you were coming off, you know, a more serious injury. So Rashad Bateman, another guy I'm definitely watching in this offense, but I am a big fan of what's going on with Marquise. But the other guy that we wanted to talk about that was big in that Colts-Ravens game was wide receiver Michael Pittman. And it looks like he's now locked into the lead wide receiver one, the ex wide receiver for that Indianapolis team. Have any takes on Michael Pittman? Was he a guy that you liked coming out of school?
He's fine. I don't, honestly, I didn't really have any super strong opinions about Pittman. I thought he was a solid second round pick in rookie drafts. He's someone who I think was drafting behind Higgins, drafting behind Chenault, drafting behind some of the Moores, those players. But he wasn't that far behind those players in terms of just an overall talent. He was pretty solid, but he didn't really stand out in really any particular area. His production was okay. I think that's the best way to describe him. And for me, the way I kind of view Pittman is someone that you know, we're talking about two teams, Baltimore and even more so the Colts, where it just, the receiving depth isn't there. And so my kind of concern for Pittman going forward is, it, beyond the season, I should say, is can he be a leader of an offense in terms of target rate? Currently, right now, he's seeing about 25% target share, which is very, very good. Number 16 in the league. That's something that I don't necessarily think that he can continue with. Just the same way with Marquise Brown, Marquise Brown, you know, seeing in the same kind of range in terms of target share, which is extremely impressive for him, does kind of surprise me when I try to look at his profile. Pittman, being someone who does kind of profile more as a little bit more of a targeted maggot, someone who's can work the intermediate center area of this field as well, can be targeted in a kind of high success rate when he is targeted. He's playing fine for his role, but however, I think it's being inflated in terms of the surrounding talent there. So in the short term, am I fine? Am I comfortable with Pittman and the way he's playing? Do I think it continue? Sure, it's fine. I don't think the talent is at the level of maybe kind of a tier one, tier two player where I would say that regardless of the talent around, regardless of the other players in the offense, Pittman going to be leading the way. And I don't think that's the case. Could very easily see a situation where he kind of gets, you know, we think Higgins is probably a better player than Pittman. But I mean, how much would it surprise you if all of a sudden, you know, Pittman gets the T. Higgins treatment in next year? I think that's something where another player could come in and take that role from Pittman. So I think long-term for me, I'm still kind of maybe down on Pittman in terms of him providing elite fantasy value. However, I don't think that the perception at this point is necessarily caught up with that. So I think it's a possibility that if you're looking to play Pittman or looking to get Pittman this year, you're not going to need to pay or to trade away assets that are extremely valuable to get him on your team. And he's going to be providing you wide receiver two, wide receiver three, so flex-ish value going forward. And I think that's fine to bet on into the future. You know, maybe wide receiver three-ish numbers after this year would be kind of my projection for him. But yeah, I guess for me, I'm still a little bit concerned about the talent. He's a solid player. I don't see anything about his game at this point where I would say, you know, he's able to move himself into that. Yeah, I've got to have him because I think the talent is just going to continue to develop sort of category. How about you? Are you seeing anything on film that's standing out to me from the stats standpoint? I can't say that I find Pittman as elite in any one category. I think he's very solid across the board, but he's not someone
I'm right there with you. I think that's an excellent evaluation, and the stats definitely match the film. He's the perfect example of a type of player where you don't need to separate in order to be functional fantasy-wise. So he's not a special mover. He's not a special separator in any way. He doesn't have a ton of quickness. You can say what you want about three cones or shuttle times, and he performed really well in those categories like Cortland Sutton a few years ago. But just in terms of his in-game play, it's not exactly a lot of it is built around him being a physical, tough athlete. And so, you know, that is contingent on you being the guy and there not being, like we saw with T. Higgins and Jamar Chase, they're not being some more explosive athlete for them to get the ball. And currently, that's the status. So Michael Pittman right now, I'm excited about. I think he'll have a good season this year. Again, we're talking wide receiver 3-4 category, and that's a great spot for him this season. But maybe in the offseason, it'll be good to revisit and talk, you know, has his value risen enough to where he's in this sell category? So I don't want to talk buys and sells too much on a guy who's just breaking out. I am happy that, you know, we're starting to see him blossom and see him and Carson Wentz start to click, and that trust and that chemistry build where he's, you know, players like him or players like Juju Smith-Schuster, there are guys where if the chemistry with the quarterback is good, then the quarterback will trust him even when he's covered. And so that's where they generate a lot of their volume and a lot of their fantasy value. And so Michael Pittman will be that kind of guy. So when you see Carson Wentz and him start to click and that trust build, that's exciting overall. So, yeah, I am happy about him. And I do think the breakout is real this season. Just be something to monitor dynasty-wise in the long term.
Yeah, I think it's definitely a situation where we need to monitor Pittman and be happy and excited for what he's producing this year. But as we like to do with young wide receivers who start producing, we like to boost them up our rankings quickly. And Pittman's is the type of guy that I think we can say from a number of different standpoints that, you know, don't be careful about how high you move him. Just do it cautiously. We don't want to have you sort of go all in on a young player who's producing when the talent and maybe profile aren't quite there to support that in the long run. How about another player who's absolutely flashing? Someone who kind of in that second round area was drafted to a different situation. However, in terms of their play styles, maybe their body types, they're kind of similar, both bigger guys. But the separation doesn't seem to be an issue for Chase Claypool, especially on deep routes. He is dynamic down the field. He is fun to watch. I love watching Chase Claypool. Break down Chase Claypool, where he's at and what he's doing. It's not so much based on touchdowns this year. So he's something that we saw last year quite often, and he's continuing his campaign this year. So what does the tape say?
Yeah, he's looking as explosive as he did last season. That's exciting to see. As much as like the refinement of the game for him is not necessarily all there, all the explosive attributes are. And so, I mean, Big Ben obviously trusts him, and he's performing well, even against like a tough Broncos D that we just saw this last game. And it's nice to see him get some volume and his fantasy like value be generated not from touchdowns. Right? He had the four touchdowns against the Philadelphia Eagles early in the season, and that kind of carried his identity in terms of like the way that dynasty players were seeing him all last season. But now that this is showing up as far as how he has stepped in and replaced Juju Smith-Schuster, totally overtaken him, even before Juju got hurt, totally overtaken him in terms of targets and everything like that. And so Claypool is the rock solid two there. And so that's really exciting to see in an offense where, you know, they're not necessarily afraid to pass the ball no matter how weak Ben's arm is. So, I think that the injury to Juju Smith-Schuster, who dislocated his shoulder against the Broncos last week, that's huge for Claypool because that locks, you know, those eight targets or whatever that are going to Juju, that's going to be spread pretty evenly between Clay and Deontay. And so for both of those guys, I'm really excited. I think that's the perfect situation. If you have this, you know, group of ambiguous wide receivers heading into the season and you're not really sure what's going to happen, one of them gets hurt, and those guys all end up being fantasy gold. So Claypool is a guy that I'm all in on this season and very excited about his future. I think Juju will end up being gone. Steelers will end up finding themselves a new quarterback, and Claypool will have established himself this year.
Yeah, I think it's dead on. For me, I think you know me. I'm a Deontay Johnson fan. I've kind of believed in his talent all offseason. Drops be damned. It's really just this kind of silly analysis. We can get into that. Drops not being very predictive at all. Ridiculous to think that people were fading him on that. So it's just awesome to see Deontay just kind of continue his play and just an excellent fantasy option each and every week. Although it is a sort of roller coaster from a injury perspective. I swear, it feels like every week I feel like I'm going to lose Deontay Johnson for the season, and somehow he's up and back on the field. But looking back at Claypool, I want to highlight something. So in week one, we know we only saw him get about a 15% target share. In week two, three, and so beyond that, the last three games that he's actually played here, his target share has been over 20%. So 22, 26, and 24%. And I expect that to kind of stay in that range or possibly even bump up. So between 20 and 25 for when Juju is out for this period. This is pretty exciting stuff for a player that is more of a downfield target. You know, we were talking about Marquise Brown. We kind of can connect the dots here as well. For a player that sees high value targets, so targets that are deep down the field, targets that are, you know, present an opportunity to break a longer play or become a touchdown. Claypool gets those targets as well. And so when you mix that target, that type of target, plus a 20-25% target share, that's just a recipe for someone who all of a sudden becomes kind of a boom bust type of player, which kind of the way maybe we were viewing Claypool earlier in the season, just being volatile, just based on the amount of targets he was getting and the type of targets he was getting. Now, all of a sudden, we can start to think of that as starting to even out in terms of his fantasy performance, just becoming a little bit more predictable based on that volume bump, which is he's seen. So yeah, if I can get a player like Claypool seeing 20%+ of targets a game, yeah, he becomes a weekly player like that. I'm no longer sort of kind of crossing my fingers and hoping that he hits, and he doesn't more often than not. He's all of a sudden that's you know, even his bad games, he's likely to catch, you know, 50 to 60 yards on maybe two catches, right? But his good games can be 10 plus catches and 120 yards and a touchdown. So it's pretty awesome to see. And, you know, we always go back to volume, and that's pretty good. And it's amazing to me that he's really only seen one red zone target so far this season. So just keep that in mind. You know, normally we think about Claypool as being this red zone target, this deep downfield target scoring all these touchdowns. That has not been the case this year. We would expect that to regress or back to the mean, so to improve in this case for him. So I would expect, you know, the touchdowns to maybe bounce back, maybe not as much as we would hope in terms of an offense, just with Big Ben not playing extremely well, having average to below average performances. So yeah, it's something to keep in mind. And Deontay Johnson is going to continue to be the target leader there in the PPR play, just because his targets are much more consistently caught. But in terms of someone who can provide you the spike weeks that will carry your team past your opponent, yeah, Claypool's a guy, and that's pretty exciting. So, congrats if you drafted him, and if you're betting on him, and if you've got him on your fantasy team. I think the questions coming into this year was it real? Was the breakout real? Was the talent there? And it seems to be that, yeah, his role is pretty locked in, and I'd be very, very happy in year two if I could get 20, even if I could have said 20% target share for Chase Claypool in year two. I think he would have been a smash at his ADP. So I think it's all in terms of for him this year, at least relative to his
we're really locked outlook. In at wide receiver two and flex. That, I mean, that's a perfect spot for him. So yeah, now you don't have to worry about anything. You just start them automatically. So yeah, pretty excited about that. Let's go to a running back. We'll finish up with our, you know, breakout players. Miles Gaskin had an excellent game against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a team that everybody says you can't start him against. And I know after a two carry game, everybody was sitting Miles Gaskin. And so, you know, it was kind of like the game that helped nobody situation, unless you got really desperate. But yeah, Miles Gaskin scored two touchdowns against the Bucs. That was impressive and exciting, I think, for him. And should probably lock him into some future volume. What do you think of that whole situation? Is he a guy that you're willing to trust after a big game like that?
Yes. I say that hesitantly. He's a player that we saw do this last year, and just, I don't know if it's this staff. It's not a new staff. It's the same staff, really, for the most part. Flores is there again, and quarterbacks kind of being shuffled around. But it's surprising to me that they're having to learn this lesson again, honestly. They went through this last year, and it just seems like they just don't want to let Gaskin run with it, like literally and figuratively. It seems like they just keep on trying to find another option, and I don't fully understand why that's the case, because Gaskin seems to be very successful when he's allowed to have that role and allowed to have majority or ownership of that role, ownership of that backfield. So for me, I think, you know, it might be just a sort of situation where I think this team has given up again. It's just they're already looking at it. They're starting Jacoby Brissett. It's not like they're going to go anywhere. They might as well play Gaskin. And I think that's maybe the situation they find themselves in again this year. They kind of failed with Achman. They failed with Brown. that, you know, these things are not working out. And that's okay, because Gaskin is there to save them. You know, Gaskin is there to you know, just say, he's fine. So I'm surprised that, again, like I said, that they're learning, having learned this lesson over again. But I do seem to think, as it's just by process of elimination, I think Gaskin is just going to continue to work himself into opportunity in a backfield devoid of talent. It's kind of interesting to see. I think you mentioned he's doing just an awful two touches in week four. It was very, very surprising, because he'd been, you know, between 20 and 10 a few weeks prior. It's kind of a hilarious spot. He's able to kind of have this revenge game more against the coaching staff, I think, honestly. I think it seems like they set him up to not necessarily succeed against Tampa Bay, and he did. So we'll see if that translates. I think it translates into at least maybe the opportunity he was seeing before, which is about what he saw in week five. So I think if you're getting him 10, 15 touches a game, which is about what you'd expect, he'll be fine. Definitely not wide receiver two value on a pretty bad Dolphins team, but someone who can be a flex play each and every week, and I think that's fine.
Yeah, don't get caught up on the carries there. You only had 5 carries against the Bucks, but they were down all game. If you're looking at snap share, and I think that's the most important thing for running backs, just in terms of, you know, just like a gross volume look, we're talking week one, 54% snaps, week two, 61%, week three, 52%, week four, 23%, just a huge drop, and then week five, last week, 69%. So pretty nice to see him bump back up there. And that, you know, overall, I think that's a great spot. He's back into your starter category. And when we're looking at the slate going ahead, I mean, we're talking about Jacksonville here this week, Atlanta next week, Buffalo Bills, and then the Texans. So you got a nice 4-week slate where I think Bills might be your only challenge matchup, and even then you're not too worried. But those, you know, 3 out of 4 games, he's definitely a guy that I want starting on my fantasy team. Miles Gaskin, I'm trusting him again.
Yeah, unlike Jalen Reagor, right? You don't trust Jalen Reagor. I'm just kidding around. You're noted Jalen Reagor hater on Twitter, and I love it, just because he's a guy that I was pretty high on coming into the season. You poked a lot of fun about his breakout age being pretty terrible, or at least breakout age being quite good, but also him not being very good. So, in terms of Jalen Reagor's turning ability, his ability to kind of, it's just like a steamboat out there. It is pretty terrible. So in kind of the same vein here, the steamboat of transitions, slowly turning my way over actually to Devontae Smith, his teammate of Reagor. Reagor, not so good. Devontae Smith looks pretty decent. So talk to me about Devontae Smith.
He's a fun watch. You know, everything that you saw in college, I think that has translated. And so even though you're not getting Jamar Chase numbers, and I don't know how long Jamar Chase can keep Jamar Chase numbers right now with so many touches. He's got a touchdown every game. Devonta Smith is playing very well for a rookie. He is being overshadowed because he's not the wide receiver one, and there is somebody else out there. But overall, he's having an excellent year. This is last two games in particular. He really showed out, beat up on that Chiefs defense. And then the Carolina Panthers defense, really not too much of a challenge for him either. So it's nice to see, though, that he's not getting too caught up by press. Some of the concerns of him being too skinny or being too small, we're not really seeing that. And so most everything is translating for him. He's in a good place. I think Jalen Hurts is struggling just generally, and so that's why the volume is a little bit lower. The offense is just built different than the Bengals, and that, you know, that needs to be understood or part of the game. Down the road, if they ended up sticking with Jalen Hurts, this is not a guy that I'm going to be afraid of in Dynasty in any way. Definitely still a big fan of Devonta Smith and his game. Happy to see it moving along.
Yeah, I'm I'm more surprised. I think Devontae Smith is a guy that I was kind of like, he's been a pretty good rookie so far. He's been fine. He hasn't been someone who is maybe particularly interesting in terms of, you know, you kind of ask the question sometimes. You say, like, who's the best rookie overall so far at the wide receiver position? It's Chase, number one. And then it seems like it's up for debate at number two. And I honestly think after going through the numbers that it's really Devonta Smith. And you know, maybe Tony's game makes it kind of interesting here for the next couple weeks if he's able to keep it up. But Devonta Smith has some really, really solid fundamentals when we're starting to look at what he's done immediately to start his rookie season. So you're seeing, you know, a snap share close to 90%. Which is pretty awesome to see is a rookie immediately getting playing value. He's top 20 in targets and he's top 30 in target share. That's out of all wide receivers. So to see a rookie kind of break into this opportunity immediately, to me, that's a situation where I would be, I'm go and see if someone is a little sour on that Eagles offense. And they're not quite realizing just the, how solid of a start Devonta Smith has had. I kind of maybe notably kind of went a little bit against the grain in terms of just sticking up for Devonta Smith this offseason. We thought his profile was actually really quite good in terms of his rookie profile. We breaking it down, his analytical grade was better than a lot of other players or a lot of other services. And I think I put a lot of trust into our model and what we're doing. To say I have him pretty easily come in wide receiver two, wide receiver three, right there with Bateman behind Chase is someone I think that, you know, I will say with really no hesitation that, you know, he was a good analytical prospect. I know that's kind of maybe surprising for some people to say just because he typically is kind of a breakout age. Punching bag and maybe his weight and size for people who kind of like speed score and things like that are kind of all over. They can complain about that too. But in terms of his production when he was playing in the field and when his production was at different points of his career at Alabama, it's pretty good. It's very, very good. And so for me, there wasn't really too many concerns from his profile from an analytical perspective coming into his rookie season. I think if I could highlight one thing, is that it's just an unbelievable efficiency at Alabama, almost 16 yards per catch, and being the top target in an offense, especially after Waddle's injury, was something that was pretty spectacular to watch. And really what it came down to was we didn't have testing numbers for him. We weren't really sure about his age-adjusted production, although he was competing with some other top talents that were drafted in the league, so we can give him kind of benefit of it out there. At least, I mean, analytically speaking, like literally we can adjust for that, and we can say the competition that he's playing against was beneficial for him, especially based on where he was drafted. So without the testing numbers, we can project him as being, you know, kind of above average athlete. I think that's translating on the field. And his projection stability rating was mid-tier, so 2.8 out of 5, which is just to say that he's a little bit more of the risky projections in the class, just risky in terms of the range of outcomes for his profile was quite large. Now, compare that, though, to where he's starting, though. He's, you know, an overall grade of 83, close to 84. That's a pretty good grade. So there was some risk in his profile, but in terms of the potential, I'd say potential, like the best outcomes for Devonta Smith, I think it was pretty easy to say that he could challenge a player like Chase as one of the better prospects in the league if he hit on the upper ranges of his profile. And that's kind of really why I bought into Devonta Smith as an analytical prospect. And then, of course, bringing in the film grade where he scored an 85.6, one of the best players in the class wide receiver position. It's, you know, kind of putting all these things together and landing on an offense that was really pretty wide open, as we were talking about, and that's paying off. It's like all these things are starting to come together for Devonta Smith, in terms of his rookie profile. We're starting to see that some of that efficiency, some of that the target separation, some of the, his ability to win targets with a 20%+ target share, even through his first five games as a rookie, which is awesome. Like, it's really exciting for me. And to see him kind of set the stage here and have maybe what I'll say is the fantasy points really haven't followed, or the hype hasn't followed yet. You know, if luck goes a little bit different way for him, Devontae Smith is being talked about as, you know, kind of, you know, in the same realm as Ja'Marr Chase. And at this point, it's just not the case. And I think there's a debate. I don't think it's a debate. I think he should be in that same sort of conversation as Ja'Marr Chase at this point for kind of best starts at the rookie position. It's just unfortunately for Devontae Smith, some luck hasn't gone his way. And fortunately for Ja'Marr Chase, his production has been extremely efficient. So pretty exciting to see. I think, you know, we can talk about narratives in the preseason as well, maybe feeding into this well. Like, Devontae Smith had some interesting narratives around him in the preseason and had a little bit of hype building around him. And he's been okay so far, but he hasn't, like, exceeded it in the way that Chase has. So for me, I think there's a few different narratives kind of driving this and could be suppressing where other players are valuing him at. So he'd be a player that I'm excited for. And I'd be actually, he'd be a trade target for me in Dynasty and in regular redraft leagues as well, because I think the points are going to follow his opportunity. And if he's getting this opportunity, the snap share, this target share already, his air yards, which is pretty good. One of the top players in the league at this point, in terms of air yards, you know, top 10 in air yards. So, I mean, yeah, like these are absolutely players that I want to go get on my team. Players that aren't producing quite yet, but all the fundamentals that are there, and we can bet on him developing more and getting more used to NFL speed going forward. So Devontae Smith, maybe, if I know you were excited about him earlier, you were all in him going into the season and as a rookie as well and for the draft. I don't know. Hopefully you can contain your excitement.
Well, so, you know, a guy that didn't have a good analytical profile is Kadarius Toney, and I think he does deserve a mention. He had a 10-catch, 189-yard game against the Cowboys, essentially in his, like, true debut as a starter. You know, you have Sterling Shepard go down. You have Darius Slayton go down. They don't have anybody else to go to, so I think a lot of the excuses and a lot of reasons to keep him off the field sounded like he's a knucklehead all offseason, skipping workouts, doing whatever he wanted to do. Sounded like that actually paid off, because, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, I'm a good athlete. I can do whatever I want. I can show up. Coach is going to scheme around me because I'm a sick athlete. And then, you know, all of a sudden, here we are, right? Lose a couple guys to injury. You're no longer buried on the depth chart, and we need you. And Jason Garrett was calling plays specifically for Toney. And so that was really, you know, just from a fantasy standpoint, that's great to see. And he performed really well. So,
and he got ejected. That's
pretty hilarious. I mean, yeah, I think he is kind of a knucklehead is a good way of saying it. But Diggs, the cornerback for the Cowboys, that essentially locked Devonta Smith up. He got eaten up a bit by Kadarius Toney. And so Toney, I think, performed well. And so there's something to be said about, you know, being able to adapt, right? And you see something like that, or you see a performance like Kadarius Toney, and you want to be at least on alert just as far as how you're watching him, potential progression. I think that there is something there for him. So he'd be exciting to take a look at for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, you hope Toney figures it out. But, I mean, if you're just looking at, for me, follow the opportunity, and someone who gets, you know, week four, he saw 25% target share in the leagues that he was available in. I emptied the clip for Fab, and I picked up Toney in those leagues. I played him the very next week in my flex place in week five, and I was very, very happy. So, follow the opportunity. You know, it's sometimes it can be as simple as that. And for a player like Toney, we kind of joke around him as being kind of this interesting profile. His analytical profile was okay, But he's such a dynamic player. And while we may not think he's polished in some areas of the field, or some areas of the game in terms of like being actually a wide receiver, he's extremely quick. He's extremely shifty. He's able, once he gets the ball in his hands, he's a threat. And if you're going to get a player like that, 35% target share in a game, you play him every game, and that's what happened last week. And so, like, I don't think people realize just how often he was getting the ball, really in the week before that as well, just because the Giants have been kind of a disaster so far. And then maybe Saquon getting back 2 weeks ago to kind of his regular ways was maybe overshadowing Tony's kind of initial, I'll say, quieter breakout game. So for me, we love opportunity. And if we're seeing someone who's athletic and, you know, his ability to kind of break plays off like Tony can, maybe that's not the best thing to do for your offense all the time. But it's sure good for fantasy. It's sure good for Tony if they're doing that. So it was pretty fun to watch. I guess maybe just because you never know what's going to happen on every play. And I'm just talking about during the play, but after the play as well. So it's pretty cool to see. So anyway, I hope you can kind of get things figured out in terms of some of the off the field issues or temperamental issues that he's had, just because we want to see him play. We want to see him on the field. We want to see him kind of producing, and because he's got the talent and he can just put it together. So Tony, he's putting, you know, his opportunity together. You know, another player who I think you are viewing as kind of maybe the raw talent there as well, but someone else who was going to get being dogged by his off season during the off season by his coaching staff as well. Brandon Ayuk, is he, what is going on with Brandon Ayuk? I mean, is it both these players? I think what's weird to me though is Brandon Ayuk, I don't understand why they're necessarily, like, with Tony, I kind of get it, right? Like skipping practices, having issues and stuff like that. But Brandon Ayuk, it just feels like they just like need a scapegoat, or they need a guy to like kind of like be mad at. And he just happened to be like the first guy who walked in the room, you know, when Shanahan was having a bad day this off season. So
yeah, it's ridiculous. I think a lot of Niners fans are confused. So first I will say that there was a reason why Brandon Ayuk was not one of my guys, despite me actually loving him. But I think fantasy, there's always questions or hesitation or concern about these Niners wide receivers and what you're going to get, because this is still an offense built on the run game. And so his upside, just in terms of receiving and all that, you have to hope for some kind of Lamar Jackson kind of figuring it out for Trey Lance. For us to be excited about two passing options in the wide receiver realm. And so to know, hey, Debo's pretty solid. Brandon Ayuk is going to have to, you know, make sure that he, you know, is as good as he can be. You know, apparently they're not seeing that on the practice field, but I'm seeing it in the game film. So my, you know, he's now my player to watch, because I think that coming out of the bye, he's a guy that I do want to hold on to, and I am making sure to monitor. I think that he's going to come into some opportunity. I do believe that a lot of the initial stuff was about the hamstring. And when Kyle Shanahan is not specifically scheming you plays, and he gives maybe, you know, he's got like well-designed plays, and he'll turn those all into Debo Samuel. He used to turn all of those plays into George Kittle. So you just funnel like an entire offense around a guy, and really center it around a specific skill set, like a guy like Debo Samuel, then, you know, there's not going to be a ton of volume for left over for Brandon Ayuk. But I think coming out of the bye, he'll be a little bit more trusted. What I saw in the last game was that his releases are still there. He's very explosive still, and he's playing physical. And so, you know, with like a guy, you know, remember – a second-round pick not too long ago, Dante Pettis got in Kyle Shanahan's doghouse, and that was the end. And it was the end of him because he is not a physical athlete. So he can be a fancy route runner, and he can do all the shaking and dancing and all that and be a pretty boy. but he never picked up on the physical elements of the game. And that is something that Brandon Ayuk has. And so that's why, for me, these receivers and the way that this team identity is built around, this physicality, this willingness to play through contact, this willingness to break tackles, this willingness to engage and be combative with defenders, I think that Shanahan will see that and see some of the things that Ayuk put on tape in the last game, and he'll be ready to say, okay, I can trust this guy a little bit more. No, I'm not all the way out on Ayuk, I think he's got under 100 yards receiving on the season. I'm still hanging on to him in Dynasty. He is kind of in this buy low realm for me right now. And so just moving ahead, I'm ready to see Ayuk bounce back. I was pretty happy with what I saw. We'll just have to see, how it looks out of the bye. But yeah, Brandon Ayuk, not a guy that I'm too scared of anymore. It was nice to see him show up a little bit on tape.
Yeah, I think he's a guy that we were both pretty excited about coming into the season, and were baffled at his usage. Debo Samuel, his usage has been fantastic. It's kind of been unbelievable to see him kind of turn it around from his, I guess, injury last year. And it's been pretty awesome to see for Debo. In terms of just putting up, I think his floor so far is 29% target share in a week. So pretty crazy. It's pretty exciting. I guess if you got Debo on your team at the moment, you're enjoying it. Do you want to turn it over here and kind of do rapid fire for the last few couple guys?
Yeah, sure. So the remaining players, I think Tim Patrick is going to be interesting. Jerry Jeudy's still out. KJ Hamler tore his ACL. The Broncos defense showed some vulnerabilities against the real offense. And so I think that they're going to need to be a team that passes the ball a little bit more. So when we're talking about Tim Patrick, he's the clear wide receiver two on that team. And I am a believer in him just as far as his gameplay. And so I think he can have some DFS value. That's really more where I'm looking, or a bye week fill-in for a guy. Tim Patrick will be a guy that I'm willing to invest in a little bit. Paris Campbell, kind of the same situation. He's coming off of injury, but I think he's turning more into, starting to click a little bit. And so he's a guy that I thought was pretty good to watch. On this Monday night game, he started to show out. What he's putting on tape, I thought was pretty good. More of a DFS dart play, and he'll be like a deep cut. So Tim Patrick's more of like your wide receiver two sub. Paris Campbell is more a guy that I might be able to bet on. He'll be in like the 4,000 range every week. And so that's a guy that I'll be willing to play if I get the right matchup.
Yeah, I like it. They're both guys who can provide value relatively affordably for you, especially since they're both should be seeing 15 to 20% target share. At least that's where they're at once they're healthy. Patrick, I think, we're kind of chuckling about him. He's a guy who has kind of just been there and producing, and was actually one of the most efficient players in that offense last year. And hey, look, he's back. So, it seems like a guy that they keep on trying to replace, and he keeps on working his way back to the top of the pile. So, good for Patrick.
Yeah.
Definitely not a guy necessarily looking at for any sort of boom week or anything with especially on that offense. But definitely a guy who you could, bet on in a flex option if you need it during a bye week or something like that. He's a safe play. In terms of that, he can provide you in a PPR format, 10 to 12 points probably. You won't take a zero. Don't necessarily think he'll win you your week ever, but he's a player who can, provide you, guys call it 10 fantasy points a week, and that's just fine. That's fine. And sometimes you need players like that, especially in deeper leagues. So no real concerns or no comments really about Tim Patrick other than, yeah, he's relatively efficient. I don't think there's really any other players in that offense that have the opportunity or have the talent to beat out Tim Patrick at this point. Now that he's kind of worked himself with Jeudy out being out back into that role. No, he's proven himself useful there. Just realized that his talent isn't going to carry him beyond the role that we saw last year as well. For Paris Campbell, he's a guy I'm a little bit more interested in going forward just because he hasn't necessarily put it all together on the field yet in terms of health and consistency being integrated to an offense. So for me, Paris Campbell's kind of the guy that I'm kind of keeping a closer eye on as he kind of returns and builds himself back into this offense, especially since his talent, at least the way that we look at him, his athleticism should dictate or should indicate that he is a player that can do, you know, can have games where he can be extremely efficient, score touchdown, long touchdown, or something like break it on fewer touches versus Tim Patrick. I don't think that's necessarily his style, but Paris Campbell can be that profile. I don't think necessarily we've seen that so far. I mean, we're talking about a player who hasn't scored a touchdown since 2019. So, of course, he only played two games last year, but it's, you know, it's kind of betting on him breaking into that high efficiency game. But if he's getting 15 to 20% target share, that game is probably going to happen. So maybe you get lucky when it does.
All right. Yeah. Well, that wraps it up for the week 6 Fantasy Football Astronauts podcast. We're good to go there.
Awesome. Yeah.
I will say real quick, Elijah Mitchell out touching Trey Sermon big time, because the fast guy is the hot hand in the Shanahan offense. So we'll see how it comes out of the bye, but Elijah Mitchell, kind of the guy to own there. That is all. That is all I'll say. But, yeah, we are the Fantasy Football Astronauts, and we are blasting off again.